present the news quiz with your host, Miles Jupp.
Hello, and welcome to the news quiz. We start with a story from The Sun, read by Caroline Nichols.
A jogger killed a puma with his bare hands this week after the animal bit him in the Rockies.
Our thanks to Paul Merritt of Dorset for sending that in. Now let's meet the teams. Will you welcome first, on my right, Desiree Birch and Helen Lewis. And opposite them, on my left, Kiri Pritchard-McLean and Susan Kalman. Desiree, whose union is in a right old state?
Oh, I mean, presumably mine. It's always mine. Like, every single week, it's mine. It is the State of the Union in the United States. Apparently, this past Tuesday, Donald Trump staged a new episode of The Handmaid's Tale because there were so many women there protesting being forced to give birth in a dystopian American landscape that we all now live in. It was amazing because he was being mocked by Nancy Pelosi, the House Speaker behind him, who was giving him aggressive claps after all the points that he made, which was especially irritating because he's usually the one giving an aggressive clap to a woman.
Allegedly. I don't know if I can say that. Can I say that? I'm going to say that.
Yeah, no, I mean, you know, so the main protest is about his ban on abortions, right? Or essentially, the conservatives want to put a ban on late-term abortions, which I think Trump is entirely behind, because I'm thinking he's probably afraid his mother's going to come back from the dead to institute, like, a 72-year after pill or something like that.
The theatre of it is incredible. I mean, you mentioned Nancy Pelosi's sarcastic clapping, and I just think that she had the face of it when she held her hands out in front of her, and it was so obviously like, baby done potty.
I mean, I feel slightly sorry for Donald Trump in a way. Because I don't think he expected to be president. I think he kind of thought someone would stop him before now. It's like when I found my cat rolling around the litter tray covered in its own feces. I watched her do it, and she watched me while I was watching her, and I think she was waiting for me to stop her, and it was quite sweet, and until it kind of dawned on her what was happening, and she just kind of sat there looking quite embarrassed. But, I mean, my cat isn't in charge of a nuclear arsenal, so... Yeah. And, you know, Putin didn't help her into the litter tray, but... The extraordinary thing was seeing Pelosi... I mean, if you're listening to this and you haven't seen it, it's everywhere. YouTube. It is a masterclass in sarcastic clapping. And her eyes are the eyes of a shark. And she is just going, I am going to get you. The really good thing about it is, I think it's 3 or 4 female candidates have already come forward for the presidency next time. And it's exceptional to watch. What they've done is they've got angry, but they're doing something about it. And I think that's wonderful.
Yeah, but he did take credit for it. He's like, there's more women than there's ever been. And the women are like, yeah, we are here to stop you. That is yeah. It's like a drink driver bragging how nice flowers look when they're tied around a lamppost.
Movement, because things have changed. Like, if you see women now, especially even in comedy in our industry, where we used to be patronised quite a lot, and we go, oh, I really need to work. Now when you see women, when someone goes, okay, so the man will go on last, and you women, you just do a wee bit at the start, and you just fold your arms and you go, do you think so? And it was like, they all just kind of stood there and went, oh, do you think so? It's quite exciting.
It was great. And, like, so they all wore white in solidarity with the suffragettes, yes. Which is so cool. And I know it didn't faze Donald Trump because he's used to talking to people in white. They normally have hoods on, though. So they, all the women wore white to show solidarity for the suffragettes, and all the men wore shirts ironed by their wives to show that there's still a long way to go.
I find much, because there was that thing, a lot of people saying, oh, you know, his tie was all sort of askew. And I sort of think, maybe his tie is the only bit of him that is sort of right, and the rest of his entire body, his entire feet. Because whenever he's talking, I mean, I don't really listen, because you know, why would you? But whenever I see him talk, I instantly just think about his colon. Because he just looks like a man who is struggling all the time. He just, that is just, his symptoms are writ large on his face.
No, it's apropos of nothing, but my boiler broke for 2 weeks recently. There is a point to this. And it was so cold in the house, and I was frightened to go to the toilet. It was so cold. And my body became frightened and refused to expel anything from my body. And after about 7 days... What? You're right, I kind of had the same look Donald Trump has.
The thing is, Susan, you were basically at that point hibernating like a bear. Like, so you know the fact that the greatest thing about bears hibernating is that they make a plug and put it up their bum so ants don't crawl in when they're asleep. That, you were one day away from that.
This sounds like an excuse a bear has had to make up in a hurry. This is the news that this week Donald Trump gave the State of the Union address, because nothing says celebrating American greatness like being lectured on democracy by a Francis Bacon painting of a slightly angry and yet also slightly horny Ham Hock. Many social media users pointed out that Nancy Pelosi was clapping sarcastically, and I, for one, welcome this new wave of political protest through the art of passive aggression. Truly, you've never known terror until a middle-aged woman says to you very quietly, "Oh, you've decided to do it like that, have you?" Points to Desiree. Helen, who said tusk, tusk to Brexiteers?
He stinks.
This must be Donald Tusk, who is the Polish politician who is president of the European Council, who basically, the Europeans are now reconciled to the fact that we are going to leave the European Union and have basically decided to have a little bit of fun. So what he did was, he did the most magnificent troll, which was, he said, there's a special place in hell reserved for Brexiters who went into this without a plan. And can you spot the trap that he's laid there? Peter Bone, one of the backbenchers, then went on Channel 4 News to go, never in my life have I been so offended. And you're like, the bias essentially gone, I would like to kill all idiots. And people have gone, how could you say that about me? Here's the other thing he did was that, so Jeremy Corbyn came out this week and said, I've got 5 tests that I need to be passed if we're going to, Labour's going to back a Brexit deal. And Donald Tusk went, well, these sound very good, Theresa. Why not agree to these? In a kind of, I mean, he's going to get a false moustache and a pipe. That is where we're going with this.
I like it. I like that it's like a rap battle now, that it's like proper beef. I think it's cool. There's a bit of smack talk going on. And also, it really got... Farage got annoyed. He said that Donald Tusk was an arrogant bully. Yeah, which is the pot calling the kettle black, and then because the kettle's black, saying that he shouldn't be able to live here. And then Jacob Rees-Mogg came out and said this really weird thing. I'm probably going to pronounce it wrong because I don't know what language he speaks. But he tweeted and he said, is it... Aquinas. Aquinas, of course. Sorry, yeah. Got him confused with the other philosopher. He said he's hardly in the Aquinas class of a theologian. And I hate having to Google stuff to know if I'm being slammed or not. Like, it's so...
Before I get offended, I just need to check. Does hell have a free trade agreement with the EU? These things are... And the funny thing is, Theresa May said that the comments that Tusk had made had caused widespread dismay. I don't think that's what happened. Everyone went, yep. My excitement is, what is a special place in hell? Because hell is meant to be bad. But a special place indicates it might be better. So what is a special place in hell for Brexiteers with no plan? Is it them listening to Jeremy Hardy on repeat? I like to think it is.
Also, they sort of clarified as well. So they went, oh, there is a space for them in hell, but only when they're dead. They're not going there immediately, which means that there are some vacant special places in hell currently. So we could nominate people that could fill those for the time being until they've been to hell. I'm thinking of people that eat burritos on public transport, that sort of thing.
I mean, mean, eating any burrito in this country is its own version of hell. Y'all don't know how to make them. I'm so sorry. And I think that everybody here is getting blowing this way out of proportion. I think you just misunderstood him. I think he said there was a special place in Hull.
Which friend of everyone in Britain has got into trouble with the mayor of Calais?
Chris Grayling, my least worst favourite politician, has been given basically an ASBO that means he can't go to Calais. I mean, how bad do you have to be that you get banned from a port? What is he doing?
Sorry, what's an ASBO?
Sweet summer child, an antisocial.
Do you know what? The way you say it, it's something very saucy.
Yeah.
antisocial behaviour. Yeah. Well, it's so long since I heard one slap Tommy. I can barely remember what they... And, yeah, it's just, yeah, if you're a sort of tearaway, Susan, you...
Because my legal background, not because I've been banned from anywhere...
That's right.
Yeah, so, like, if you're a ruffian and you go to the town centre and you do what ruffians do, you might get an ASBO to prevent you... And if you go to the town centre, you would be arrested for breaking the terms of the ASBO. It's like an antisocial thing. But for a politician to be given one, it's quite bad, because it's usually very antisocial kind of people that
he's
you
just going
want.
To Calais and kicking the bins over and stuff.
Yeah. So it's
is there anything else that's come up that you haven't understood that you'd like us to?
I mean, literally every sentence there's a word that I'm just like, write that down and Google it. Like, no idea.
Yeah, I don't think we've got time to explain Chris Grayling to you.
Okay.
How did that happen? The other thing that happened this week is that Parliament ran out of stuff to do at 3:27 on Tuesday. Which just strikes me like the last day of term, like they might have all put a DVD of The Lion King on.
Yeah.
So they didn't get
just
mad.
Just hear people playing Connect Four.
Exactly, and start screwing up like toilet paper and stick it to the wall of the loos. I just think that's probably what they were doing.
But they ran out of just everything to do.
The adjournment debate adjourned Parliament at 3:27, and they went, "Hey, lads on tour." I imagine.
This week, Donald Tusk caused anger by asserting there was a special place in hell reserved for MPs who supported Brexit without a plan. Jean-Claude Juncker tried to laugh off the comments later, saying the only hell he knew was doing his job as president of the European Commission, before stuffing his pockets with free croissant, then heading off in a subsidised limo to eat a slap-up lunch of steak a la Schadenfreude. Tusk is wrong as well. Rees-Mogg does have a plan. 1, call for Brexit. 2, put all money into offshore accounts. 3, get Nanny to drive the getaway car. 4, hang out with Lord Lucan and Shergar in a Swiss chalet until this all blows over. Brussels officials were quick to clarify Mr. Tusk's remark, stressing that the Brexiteers' special place in Hull would be... Do beg your pardon. Brussels. The vowels...
It's ASPO.
Brussels officials were quick to clarify Mr. Tusk's remarks, stressing that the Brexiteers' special place in hell would be for when they're dead and not right now, which is reassuring. Death will feel a painfully long way off for Britons after Brexit, except, of course, for anyone that requires insulin or food. 2 points to Helen. Kiri, who thinks the PC's PCs aren't very PC?
This is the police are using algorithms to predict where crime's going to happen, basically. So they're like, oh, according to our results, more crimes are going to happen in this area. But it's flawed because it uses the data that they have, which is often really biased. So, like, areas with more black and Asian communities, they tend to stop and search and they tend to arrest more people. So it just means that it's going to kind of perpetuate unhealthy stereotypes potentially. And I don't trust artificial intelligence at all, because artificial intelligence is the stuff that when they're online shop, when they're like, oh, sorry, we don't have any tampons, here's a bag of Haribos. Like, they make ridiculous decisions. And like the AI on my Instagram account as well, because I follow exclusively drag queens and Judy Garland fan pages, is now trying to push to me male gay dating sites. And I've had a look, and there's some wonderful chaps on there, so I'm willing to do everything it takes to settle down with you and your French bulldog.
Do you think this is a sensible idea, Susan?
No, I mean, I think I completely agree with Kerry. Algorithms don't work. There were some youths in my local park the other day, and...
Do you mean there were some children on the swings?
Did you shop them, Susan? Did you have them rounded up?
Okay, genuinely, right? I don't like people who litter. I will chase after the car. and shout, "This is your litter," and throw it at them. And if there are youths, I will get in my car and I'll drive slowly down the street. I mean, I'm not saying I filmed them.
No, you're really going to have to...
It sounds as if your response to littering is to curb crawl. I'm not sure.
I keep a notebook of number plates that park in the street for a period of time.
Oh, wow, you're like the sort of misfit character that turns out to be hold the vital evidence in a sort of murder programme.
I do my ironing in the bedroom upstairs, which has a great... It's got a big bay window, and I just look out the window and I look at everything that's happening, and if I see someone new in the street, I'll make a note. And if I... What? And if I see someone going up to the neighbour's house, I'll take a pic...
We'll all agree not to mention this again.
Yeah. I just like to know my area is secure. Like, I've already worked out if there was a problem in the area where I could build a hide in the garden with a motion capture camera to see what was happening.
It's only sensible.
Yeah.
You've broken about 8 laws in this whole story.
No, I haven't. Yeah. No, I haven't. I tell you why. Because they're parked on a public street. I'm not publishing the photographs of the number plate. I'm keeping it in a private notebook for my own attention so I can see if there's a pattern. I am not putting the film of the children on Facebook. I'm just keeping it in a folder marked suspicious children.
Who doesn't have a suspicious children folder?
Something happens and the police come round and say, "Did you see anything, Miss Calman?" I'll go, "Yes, I did." Just what I'm doing is helping the police. I'm like a neighbour... I'm a one-woman neighbourhood watch.
You're a vigilante. That's what you are. You're a danger.
No, because I've never threatened anyone.
Well, you've just followed them in a car slowly. Oh, look, there's a car which doesn't appear to have anyone driving it behind us. Coming after us really slowly. Well, that certainly makes me relax. Yeah. I find the thing with the algorithms that we know that thing if you buy something and then the next week you see lots of adverts for it, so you buy a sofa or whatever it is, and then the next week there's loads of sofas or whatever. So I'm not going to do that. And the way you need to flip it to make it work, I'd have thought if you've done an armed robbery last week, the next week you probably think, "God, it was a bit sort of nerve wracking, wasn't it? I'm not going to do one this week." Right? So, but the people most likely to do an armed robbery that week is just anyone that's never done an armed robbery before, so they should all be arrested.
A similar experience, which is booking.com. So I use it a lot to book places for work. So you book like a single bedroom in Norwich and it will send you an email afterwards saying, "Helen..."
What kind of work is it you do, Helen?
And it will send me an email a week after. It says, "Helen, do you want to turn your trip to Norwich into an adventure?" No, not overly. But yeah, they do that a lot, don't they? You buy one dehumidifier on Amazon and it thinks it's the start of a lively career collecting dehumidifiers.
Yeah, so her damp's probably got worse by now, surely.
Well, I mean, this is all very funny, but like there really are lives at stake here because basically we're going to be outsourcing all of our racial profiling to machines, which is going to put a lot of hardworking Britons out of work, first of all. But I feel like the people who are going to be programming this and teaching this are all of the sort of cops in America who get assigned to desk duty after they've shot a kid in the back, right? So, like, they're not the people to be telling the machines what to be looking out for. I mean, seriously, like, Liam Neeson's probably going to be looking for work, you know, soon. And even though he has a thirst for justice, I do not want him on my back, all right?
This is the story that human rights organisation Liberty have expressed concerns over police forces using computer algorithms to predict crime. There are concerns that such algorithms could unfairly target ethnic minority communities as crime hotspots, although this would, of course, be offset by data from the county of Midsummer, from which we can extrapolate that 1 in 3 rural white Britons is a homicidal vicar. 2 points to Kerry. Susan, who's today's will soon be yesterday's?
After 3 decades of presenting the Today programme, John Humphreys has announced that he's leaving the show. Many people are sad about this, others less so. To some, he's the personification of the BBC, reliable, full of gravitas, and still a bit worried about this women having jobs thing. I know that some people listening at home will be fuming at me just now thinking, oh, here's another feminist having a go at John Humphreys. He's a good guy, isn't he, John Humphreys? He's a good fella. Why don't we get back to the times when these feminists didn't ruin things, you know, with their equality and all that? The good times, you know, where a woman would give birth while making a gin and tonic for her husband when he came home. Why don't we get back to the good old days where feminists didn't say, like, stop making such a fuss about a man reading the news in the morning, no matter what his opinions are on things. You know, do these women not have anything better to do with their lives than complain about John Humphreys in the morning? And my answer is no. I have nothing better to do. Because genuinely, he said himself he should have gone years ago. And I mean, no disrespect, he's a very respected man. But I do think the tone of the show was quite difficult. I'd like to see someone a bit more light-hearted, Sue Pollard type, take over. from a wee bit of Sue Pollard. And I mean, if they are looking, I would like to put myself forward as the next host. I'm not great in the mornings, but then neither was he.
Do you think your neighbourhood could cope with you leaving? Wouldn't there be, like, a massive spike in crime, do you think, if the perpetual
Webcam
watcher suddenly leaves the close?
Webcam it. Give the link as well to our neighbour. Get my neighbour Brian.
Or you could watch it while presenting the Today programme and they'll say, God, it's really started going for sort of local news these days.
I mean, it's the same story every day, isn't it? So you just say Brexit.
Yeah.
So basically, you don't need anyone in the studio. Just have someone on talking about Brexit and everyone can go about their business and watch Lorraine like the rest of us do. Today I'm talking about caravanning and the menopause.
Helen, are you a big fan of John Humphreys?
You know, he just means such a lot to me that I find it difficult to put it into words. I just really feel that mornings won't be the same, you know?
It's an all-female panel being asked about John Humphreys. And all of us are being so restrained. This morning time.
Oh, I think he's a bellend.
Yeah!
So wait, Desiree. He's done this announcement saying that he's leaving, but there hasn't been a successor named, right? So yeah. Presumably it's going to be really exciting times around the homes of Michelle Hussein and Martha Carney as they wait to get the phone call about which one of their male co-hosts is going to take over the show.
That was just a completely unbalanced hatchet job, wasn't it?
The thing is, the BBC doesn't need to be balanced at all times.
No,
because
no.
He has had the airways for, you know, for 30 years and we'll get maybe 2 minutes on the news quiz and I think that's probably as much balance as we're going to get, doesn't it?
Well, it needs to be impartial, doesn't it, the BBC?
OK, well, do you want me to say something nice about him?
Yes.
OK. Yeah. I think he has great posture. That should do for compliance, shouldn't it?
Yeah, we should all say one nice thing about him, real or imaginary. Desiree.
Before today, I didn't know who he was.
I think, like me, he probably struggles to get enough vitamin D.
I tried some of his quiche once. Delicious.
I once saw him wolf down a urinal cake with ferocity.
And excellent posture.
Yeah. With a very straight back.
Yeah.
And it's that kind of can-do attitude.
Caroline, I know you're not really allowed to speak. I
cannot possibly comment about
it. No, of course. That would be quite unprofessional.
Blink twice for you.
I'm Melania.
Right.
Every woman at BBC Radio stands up and says, I am Melania. No, I'm Melania.
Well, there we are. You can do something with that in the edit.
I just find it fascinating that someone's on a news programme when basically they regard with absolute contempt anything that happened after about 1963. Seems to be like the first qualification of working in news should be that you like things that are new. I went on once to talk about Grand Theft Auto, the computer game, and it was Justin Webber was interviewing me, and I talked about it. I said it was the biggest game that year, and it made billions of pounds. And at the end, apropos nothing, John Humphreys chips in and goes, why can't people just play chess? was a, you know, it was a fair point, John, but that's not what I was here to talk about. I just sort of think, you know, well, that's enough about Tinchy Strider, but what about the loot?
This is old grandfather news himself, John Humphreys, who has announced he'll step down from hosting Radio 4's Today programme after 32 years. John Humphreys will continue to host Mastermind, the show in which he does actually have to say if his guest has given an answer that's not factually correct. Incidentally, my specialist subject, if I ever go on Mastermind, is who should have left the Today programme years ago? Yes, but this is absolutely a BBC show commenting on a BBC news report about a different BBC programme. Perhaps you'd like to send in a complaint to the BBC so that the BBC can run an item on whether the BBC talks about the BBC too much. Anything to kill time before we all succumb to the blissful release of The Void. Speculation over Humphrey's replacement include Emily Maitlis, Nick Robinson and Jeremy Paxman turned down to medium angry. He's a polarising figure. To some listeners, he's a condescending, tweedy, aggressively jingoistic and sneering elder statesman of radio, a sort of grammar school wing of LBC. To others, he's the shouting that comes out of the radio till the nurses come to turn you over and give you your tablets. Two points to Susan. And at the end of round one, these scores are Helen and Desiree have 4, but Kiri and Susan have 6. We start round two with an unfortunate juxtaposition of headline banners in The Times.
Married women and affairs. Will it really wreck a relationship? Why older waiters and barmen are the best.
Our thanks to Alexandra Lewis for sending us that. Desiree, who should be screening their children's habits?
Parents should be screening their children's habits in terms of limiting their screen time. Another study came out this week that's basically urging parents to kind of have the talk with their kids a little bit younger, but the talk is kind of about their phones. Because if you think about it, like a phone is very much like a penis, like it is an appendage that you pay a lot of attention to. And it's a useful tool, but in the wrong or idle hands can be very dangerous, right?
I've realised that the weirdest thing that I voluntarily do to myself, I don't know if you do this, is when you're lying in bed at night, you start reading your phone with one eye. Does anyone else do this? And then you get up to go for your inevitable nighttime wee, and you realise that one eye has got brilliant night vision and the other's got none at all. It's genuinely the most sinister thing you can voluntarily do to yourself in bed. I challenge you.
Yes. My one eye has the poor night vision because I keep dropping the phone on the same eye over and over again as I'm looking at it.
I always use my phone at the dinner table. You can fit more on it than a regular spoon. The thing is, after, I mean, a 15-year relationship, sometimes you need to look at your phone. I mean, the reality of relationships, you love them, you want to be with them, you're not going to split up with them, but, God, they're boring sometimes. You know? So, how was your day? And you're like, God, oh, I could be peeling Candy Crush.
I think it's good at the dinner table. I would rather look at my phone than anything that my dad cooks. I've seen him boil mozzarella. I don't even know the mechanics of that.
I think there's a little bit of that nostalgia thing about all this, you talk to your children at the dinner table, because we didn't have phones, and the point was we were told to be quiet at the dinner table and eat our dinner and then go upstairs to do your homework, you went to bed. You didn't talk. No one ever talked. Yeah. It's done me no harm. I'm absolutely fine.
Oh. You're absolutely an example to us all, Susan.
Agree with Susan on that. Like, I mean, before there were phones, we were all eating our dinner around televisions, and I'm guessing before that, everyone was eating it around a radio, and before that, everyone was staring at an etching or something. People, if you don't want to talk to your family, you don't want to talk to your family. Like, that's it.
This is the news that the chief medical officer has warned parents not to let their children take screens into their bedroom or use them at dinner. Doctors say parents shouldn't let children use screens at dinner. Dinner time isn't for mindless internet surfing, it's for engaging children in intellectual discussions about whether or not you're going to eat your sodding peas, you little git! The only device you should take to bed is your radio. Snuggle down and hold it tight like a chunky plastic teddy bear and let the soothing sounds of today in Parliament lull you to dreamland. Night-night, little ones. Night-night. 2 points to Desiree. Helen, who wants to make a killing out of being born?
Oh, this must be the story of a guy called Raphael Samuel. He's 27 years old, he's from Mumbai, and he wants to sue his parents for having been born. And I read this and I kind of thought, oh, yeah, right, snowflake, get over it. Happens to us all. But actually, it's quite interesting. He's part of something that's called the Voluntary Human Extinction Movement, which, again, someone who's been on a crowded tube will have a great deal of sympathy for. And well, the thing I like about this is that this is coming from a very traditional society in India where there's a lot of pressure to have children, and he is an anti-natalist. This is about saying it's OK not to have kids. And there's a huge amount of rhetoric in our society about people who don't have children are kind of selfish husks who, you know, don't know joy or love. And that is true of me, but it's a coincidence. I don't think probably suing his parents seems a bit excessive. Yeah. That's the bit where he's lost me. But I'm voluntary human extinction. I'm pro. Just coming out, you know, strongly, you know, anti-Brexit, pro-human extinction. My politics right there.
And just that there's two parts to his argument, as Helen says. The second one I agree with, which is that I don't have any children, I don't want to have any children. It's not through some form of philosophical thing. I just don't like them, and I like to be able to go on holiday when I want. So I'm not overly fond of them, but I've never had a maternal feeling in my life towards anything other than cats.
I think I've rumbled him, though, because he's talking about how, basically, what he keeps taking issue with is, you know, parents go ahead and then they have these kids, forcing them to have a career. And they're like, oh, this is what this is. He doesn't want to have to work. And now he has like this whole movement to pretend that he's doing something like larger than that, when actually he just doesn't want to work. And what other people who don't want to work do is say that they're a DJ. But he's really sticking to it. And he's like, parents are hypocrites because parents should put the needs and wants of their children above everything else. But a child is something that they want. Like, oh, but that is not true. As the youngest of three with an age gap of 15 and 13 years between me and my brothers, not every child is wanted. Let me tell you. I asked my dad about it when I was like 16, and I said, Daddy, was I a mistake? And he went, none of you were planned. And just that's
fair. This is the story that 27-year-old Raphael Samuel from Mumbai is suing his parents for bringing him into the world without his consent. Samuel has compared having children to kidnapping and slavery, and as someone who recently forwent a lucrative guest appearance on Casualty to spend the afternoon fishing poo out of the ballpark of a soft play centre, can I say, I hear you. To be honest, if my child tried to sue me for giving birth to them, I'd just be pleased they were taking an interest in something that doesn't slow down my Wi-Fi. 2 points to Helen. Kiri, what's selling by the pound?
So, Poundland are selling engagement rings. Oh. One guy's like, oh, thank God. It's called a bling ring, which feels like they pick the title and then work backwards. So they launched it, and in a week, 20,000 were sold. I know, but I can totally see why this has taken off as a model. So basically, I was single for a bit, and I started talking about it on stage, and a weird thing is people thought I was soliciting on a grand scale. So what I did is I bought an engagement ring that I used to wear on stage, and then what would happen is guys would come over after gig, and they'd start cracking on, and then they'd see an engagement ring, and they'd try harder. Yeah, it's quite the investment. Apparently, West Yorkshire is where most of them are sold. I'll let you make your own, Joe. And the tagline to it is, because we promise they'll want to choose their own. So that's the idea. I think it's quite a sweet idea that you buy this engagement ring to go, listen, I want to marry you. I just can't afford to get you the ring that you deserve yet. So this will sort of do for now. It's a placeholder ring for your placeholder fiancé. If you can't read through my search history or browse through my engagement ring Pinterest page, then you don't deserve my virginity.
I actually think Poundland are onto something here because I think it's quite sweet. I want to marry you, but I want to make sure that the ring you have for the rest of your life-ish is the one you want. We can sneer at things sometimes, but I actually think it's quite a sweet thing. And the next time I get married, I will be doing this.
Because what is the implication of that? It's like, you know, because we promise they'll want to choose their own because you have terrible taste in jewelry and people, obviously. Yes. I like that they call it a placeholder ring because obviously once you've put it on her finger, you'll be able to find the right one for the real ring because it's going to have that huge green band around it that's itching and just making your skin peel back all week long. But I kind of like it because I feel like I would actually make use of that because when I lived in New York, I had a great scam going with my gay best friend where he would just decide to propose to me in Burger King and we got so many free fries.
I think a Poundland engagement. I think it's sweet and fun. Like, I want to go to a Poundland wedding. In fact, I've definitely been to a Poundland wedding. Yeah, it's in a flat roof rugby club and they're a right laugh. I'd much rather go to a Poundland wedding than a posh one, sat on some hay bales, surrounded by jam jars and freelancers. It's...
This is the story that Poundland have sold over 20,000 of their £1 engagement rings. The best thing about a £1 plastic ring is it barely hurts when she throws it back in your face. The retailer said it sold 20,000 in the space of 7 days, so either a PR masterstroke or panic Brits doing what they can to secure themselves a last-minute EU passport. 2 points to Kiri. Susan, whose decimal system is about to become a lot more dewy?
So I've been given this question, and big picture, it's about saucy books, like erotic books. And I've been given it, and I don't know why I've been given it, because I'm the most repressed human being that has ever lived when it comes to me. And if I was to write an erotic book, it'd be called You Can Keep Your Brogues On. So I'm going to keep this very brief because I really don't like talking about this. The British Library has a collection of historical saucy books and stuff, and they're digitising it. So there's someone called Roger. wrote a description of the female body as a land needing to be ploughed. My body needs a fly mow, I'll be honest.
Helen, are you excited by this cache of pornography becoming available to a wider public?
I kind of am, actually, because I've been writing this book this year, and one of the things I've been writing about is the history of sex research. And is there ever any group of academics who have more fun than sex researchers? It just seems to have been the real kind of banter PhD. And I found that one of the guys that was in charge for a time of this collection was a guy called Eric Dingwall, who was known to his friends as Dirty Ding. And I just think how... I just imagine a moustache, I'm thinking pince-nez, Dirty Ding. Shows you into his, like, cupboard full of... What was it, like, 40 copies of Fanny Hill that they had? Incredible.
That's right, yeah, yeah. Or Memoirs of a Woman of Pleasure. Personal favourite, absolutely. Absolute stonker. Real page-turner.
They said a lot of these saucy books, it's written by men for men. Like, loads of erotica. But there is a, like, genre of female erotica. And that's where you just... it's basically a couple, and they sit down and they sort of go through tile samples. So good.
There's no need for it. There's no need for it. If I want to be sexy for my loved one, I will take my duffel coat off.
That's ruined Paddington for all of us.
This is the news that I have just applied for a British Library card. Not for what you think. I'm researching a very serious novel about bums. Maddie Smith, the library's curator of printed collections, said of the online publication, it's the final push, before throwing her head back in wild abandon and collapsing sweatily into Sir Reginald's muscular embrace. 2 points to Susan. Before we reveal the final scores, has anybody got a cutting that they'd like to share? Helen.
Kathy Joyce saw these two programmes back-to-back in her TV magazine in Canada. 8 p.m, Harry and Meghan's wedding story. 9 p.m, life sentence.
Desiree.
Yes, a listener, Jeff Dobson, sent in a photo of a nearby electrical box with a safety warning on it. And the safety warning reads, opening this box will result in death by electrocution and a 50 euro fine.
Kiri.
This is from Tom Crichton, and it is a flyer for a pageant. So this is for Miss Essex Spring Pageant. It says, be part of the fun and join the girls. First-timers or old pros, welcome.
Susan.
This has been sent in by Simon Morgan, who saw this on Freecycle and thought of us. It's an electric drill, Black & Decker. The description is, drill with carry case and a front grip. It has been in storage, but I've tested it this morning on my neighbour and it works fine.
Thank you. And now let's take a look at the final score. Desiree and Helen have 9, but this week's winners are Kiri and Susan with 11. Ah. Before we leave you, here is a Valentine's offer from Marks and Spencer, sent to us by Robert Emery Jones.
Are you ready for our love sausage? Heart-shaped. Heart-shaped, lightly truffled, wrapped in bacon, and in our stores tomorrow. Say it with sausages. Tag someone you'd like to share a love sausage with this Valentine's Day.
And with that, goodbye.
Taking part in the News Quiz Extra were Helen Lewis, Desiree Birch, Kiri Pritchard-McLean and Susan Kalman. In the chair was Miles Jupp and the news was read by me, Caroline Nichols. The chair's script was written by Madeline Brettingham, Gabby Hutchinson-Crouch and Sarah Morgan, with additional material by Eleanor Morton and Kat Sadler. The producer was Sarah Sharp and it was a BBC Studios production.